Today's shiur, Maseches Sanhedrin, Daf Mem Zayin. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we look at the top of Mem Zayin Aleph, we will notice a house form, a geometric form, which is a series indicator. In fact, we're in the middle of a discussion. This is already labeled as number 5, as you can see in the numbering system that continues to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara. The discussion in which we are found concerns the significance of eulogies. Are eulogies designed to honor the living or an honor to the dead? Toshma, we continue with a fifth attempt to settle this matter. Nivze bi'enov nim'as. This is a pasuk in Tehillim, and the Chazal understand this pasuk as a reference to Ze Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda. This is a reference to King Chizkiyahu, Shegirer Atzmois Aviv al Mito Shel Chavolim. That practiced, which an act that would seem to be very disparaging to his father. His father was Ochaz, an evil king. And the Gemara mentions that Chizkiyahu dragged his father's remains on a bed made of ropes. This was to create a sense of embarrassment and disparagement of his deceased father. Ve'im ishum yakra d'chayehu, my taima, if that which we do to the deceased is an honor to the living, so how could Chizkiyahu do this to his father's remains, which in effect would be a disparagement to all of those that remained after him, all the survivors? So the Gemara answers the reason Chizkiyahu did this was Kihechi Detehevei Le Kapora Lavua. This would serve as an atonement for his father. The Gemara asks, Umishum Kapora Davua Mashu Le Liakra Yisrael? And for the personal atonement of his father, are we able to forfeit the honor of the rest of Israel? So the Gemara answers, Yisrael gufayo nicha lehu demichli yakrayu legabei. The Jewish people themselves were accepting of their honor being compromised for the benefit of Ochaz, for his achieving atonement. Toshma. Another attempt to settle the issue is brought from the death of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Before Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi died, he ordered that there should be no eulogizing for him in small towns, but rather only in large cities. Ve'i amris yakro dechaye, if you were to think that eulogizing is for the honor of the living, my nafka le mina. What difference does it make to Rebbe where the eulogizing would take place? So the Gemara answers, Kosovar liyakru be Yisrael tfei. That in fact it is for the honor of the living, and this way, by having eulogies for him taking place only in central locations, this would force all those that were located in surrounding areas and on farms and hamlets to gather together in a large assembly in a central town, in central cities, and there the eulogies would take place in mass. And this would be an honor to the Klal Yisrael, an honor to the living. Toshma, Helinu Lichvodo, Lahavi Loi Aroin Vetachrichin. This was mentioned in our Mishnah, that if the deceased was left unburied for providing a casket and shroud, eino over olav, then there is no violation of the pasuk that said lo solin nivlosoi, that a body should not be left unburied into the night. So this issue here of caring for the honor of the deceased, whose honor is at issue? My lav lichvoid shames. Is it not for the honor of the deceased? Loi lichvoido shochai. This leaving over of the body unburied in order to provide for its needs is really a sense of honor for the living. So the Gemara asks, Umishim kvoido shochai mavis le lames, and in order to provide for the honor of the living, mavis means we leave over, we malinim, we leave overnight the body unburied. So the Gemara answers, in this is true. Ki omar rachmono lo solin nivloso ala eitz, when the Torah says not to leave a body unburied, dumya de tolui, it's given circumstances like the case of the Torah, where you have a condemned individual suspended on a tree, suspended on wood, on the board. The isbe bizayon, that's a situation where there is disparagement, and we don't want the body to be left in a state of disparagement. Aval hacha, but in this case where the body is not suspended and it's being left simply unburied for the sake of providing the casket and shrouds, kevon de les bezayon, since there is not a situation of disparagement, loy, then there is no violation. Toshma. We present another source. Helinu lichvoidoi, if a body was left unburied for honor, l'shamea olav ayoros, in order to l'shamea olav ayoros is to assemble people, assemble groups in order to eulogize, l'havi loy mekoinenos, to bring those that would say kinos, that would participate in the dirges, lahavi loi oroin v'tachrichin, if he's left unburied, for providing caskets and shrouds, eino over olav, there is no violation of lo solin, shekol ha'oise, eino elo lichvoide shomes, because all that we see being done is done for the honor of the dead. What we've done here is dashed underline the chvoide shomes, so that we see that practices done after the death of an individual are for the sake of the deceased. The Gemara rejects this. Hochi komar, kol ha'oisa lechvoide shel chai, all that which is done for the honor of the survivors, ein bui bizoyon lemeis, there is no disparagement to the deceased. But the main point being that the practices that we do after one's death are really for the honor of the living. Toshma, Rabbi Nosson Omer, simen yofel lemeis shenifroi mimenu lachar misa. A positive sign for someone recently deceased is that he receives retribution after his death. Meis shaloi nispad, for example, a dead individual that does not receive a hesped, doesn't receive a eulogy. Velo nikbar, or is not buried. O shechaya gorosa, or the body is dragged off by a beast. Oi shehoyu gishomim mizafen al mitasa, or during the funeral procession, it's raining and making the body getting wet. Zehu simen yofe lames. This is a good sign for the dead. Rashi says simen yofe lames kishinifroi mimenu boilam hazeh, when he is receiving retribution in this world, liachar misa, after death. The yesh loy kapor b'kach, this serves as an atonement for him. What do we see from this? Shma mino yakro de shachvi hu. Shma mino, we see from here the that which takes place after death is in the final analysis for the honor of the dead. The Rashi says shma mino yakro de shachvi hu, the e lav yakro de shachvi, if if there was no issue of honor for the dead, amai michbar bebizyone, then how is it that he receives atonement upon being disparaged? So with this, we conclude this particular sugya, and we see that that which we do for the benefit of the deceased after his death is in order to honor him. As we go on in the Gemara, we take note of the topic heading and structural note that are combined, the Nosei Mivneh, in the margin. So we see this bowtie form with, we see colored in tips. These are going to be Hezberim Leha Dekotoni B'Mishnah, explanations for a couple points mentioned in the Mishnah. One, the lo hayu kivrin hanidain lamoves bekivrei beis avosov. The ein kivrin rosha etzel tzadik. One point the Mishnah made was that the condemned are not buried in their family plot because we don't bury the evil together with the righteous. And point number two, lama hayu shnei botei kvoros mesukonim lebezin. Why were there two separate cemeteries set aside for the Beis Din? So as we turn back to the Gemara text, the Mishnah has said, lo hayu kivrin oisoi bekivrei beis avosov. That's one point. And then, elo shnei botei kvoros hayu mesukonim, echad le neherogin, for the Niskolim and the Nisrafin. The Gemara asks, v'chol kach lama. Why is this? So the first question is going to be focused on the why is this that he's not buried in his family plot. So we notice the geometric form, lefi she'ein kovrin rasha etzel tzadik, because he is a rasha, he's been sentenced to death by the Beis Din as a result of violating a capital offense knowingly. He's classified as an evil person, and he's not to be buried with the rest of his family that are not that, rather they are tzadikim, righteous. At this point we see a brackets, and the length of the brackets are indicated by the vertical dash dotted line, and it goes down a number of lines. The at the point that this dash dotted line finishes, you'll notice in the middle of the line another bow tie form with colored in tips. This will be a hesper for why the Mishnah makes reference to two separate cemeteries that were under the court's auspices. And we see there, if we skip for a moment, Ukeshem Shein Kovrim Rosh Etzel Tzadik, just like the point we just mentioned before the brackets, that we do not bury the wicked with the righteous, Kach Ein Kovrim Rosh Gomor Etzel Rosh Kal, so too, even within the category of evil, there are two separate categories. Those are the Rosh Chomor, severely wicked, and Rosh HaKal, lightly wicked. The Rosh HaChomer, a reference to Niskolan and Nisrafin, and the light wicked, the Neherogin and Nechnokin. With having presented the general structure of the Gemara, let's now go over the Gemara straight through. We asked, why is it that the condemned is not buried in his family plot initially? And that's because we don't bury a Rosh Etzel Tzadik. The Omar Rav Acha Bar Chanina, in the bracketed section, we will offer an explanation to this point of not burying the Rosh Etzel Tzadik. He says, Minayin Shein Kovrin Rosh Etzel Tzadik. From where do we know this? Shinamar Vayhi Hein Kovrim Ish. The Posuk in Sefer Melachim Beis, Posuk Perek Yud Gimel, describes the burial of a man, Vinei Ro Es HaGedud. The people involved in the burial noticed an oncoming army, threatening their welfare. Vayashlihu esoish bekever Elisha. They threw the body that they were attempting to bury into the grave of the prophet Elisha. Vayelech vayiga hoish baatzmos Elisha, and the body touched the remains of Elisha. Vayechi vayokom araglav, and the body came back to life and stood up. The point being that this person was a wicked individual, and he came back to life so as to move away from the tzaddik, from Elisha. He should not be buried, should not be found in the same place. Omer le Rav Papa, he says, I don't see that from this pasuk. V'dilma le'ikumi, maybe the idea or the purpose of this guy coming back to life was simply to serve as a fulfillment of v'yi na pishnayim beruchacha elai, where we needed to see this bracha fulfilled, where Elisha requested from Elio Hanavi, his mentor, that he, Elisha, would be twice as great as Elio. And we know in the case of Elio, he resurrected a single person. He brought back to life someone that died. And in the case of Elisha, we need to see two people being brought back to life, so to speak. And the whole reason for this person who was thrown into Elisha's grave coming back to life was to serve as a fulfillment of this point. Amale, if that's the reason for this event taking place, was to, as a fulfillment of Elisha's being twice that of Elio, then can you possibly explain the following? Ihachi hainu desanyo, is that then to be understood as what's taught here? Al raglav amad luveso loholach. It describes that person who came back to life is simply standing up on his feet but never going back home. In other words, it was a temporary type of resurrection, and that kind of resurrection would not constitute the fulfillment of the bracha of Elisha being twice that of Elio. Therefore, we are able to conclude from this that this fellow's coming back to life was to really fulfill the precept taught in the Mishnah that we don't bury the wicked together with the righteous. Well, if we rejected this incident as being a fulfillment of Elisha's being twice that of Elio, so then where do we see Elisha's being twice that of Elio? It must be noted before we go further, we know that Elisha brought back to life already an individual, the Ben Isha Hashunamis. That being one case, we need to find a second one in order to find him twice as great as Elio. So where do we find the second event? Elo v'yehi no pishnayim hechi mishkachas lo da'achye. Where do we find a bringing back to life on a second occasion? Amalei Rabbi Yochanan, sheripo tzoras namon shishkula kemes. We found a second event whereby Elisha successfully healed Naaman, a general, an army general from Aram. And he was healed from his tzoras ailment. At tzoras being shkula kemes, being equated with death. Dichtiv, we find in with regard to Miriam, who also experienced tzoras, it says al no ti kemes, where she was prayed for in order to get better, and she who was a tzoras was described as let her not be like the dead. So we see that tzoras is tantamount to death, and therefore healing someone from that would be tantamount to resurrection. Ukishem Shen Kovrin Rosh Eitzel Tzadik. Rashi points out a structural note here, and as we mentioned in our introduction, at this point the Gemara is going back to explain the second point mentioned in the Mishnah that concerning the two cemeteries that were at the disposal of Beis Din. So the Gemara continues and says, "Ukashem shein kovin rosha etzel tzadik, kach ein kovin rosha chomor etzel rosha kal." And just like we don't bury an evil person with the righteous. We do not bury the severely wicked together with the lightly wicked. Question. Valiskun arba kvoros. If we're interested in making a separation between the different levels of wickedness, so then since there are four methods of court execution, there should be four different cemeteries. So the more answers, Shnei Kvoros Gemara Gemiri La. There's an oral tradition, Rashi calls it a halacha l'moshe misinai, that there are two cemeteries for the court executed and not four. Before we go further in the Gemara, let's take a note of the Nosei Mivneh heading. We notice a house form with a colored in roof. These are going to be memros of Rabbi Yochanan, comments made of Rabbi Yochanan, but in Dechias Korbono Shel Odom, the rejection of a person's sacrifice. And why would a person's sacrifice be rejected? So we see here Mishum Debailov, because, and we're going to notice a diamond with a colored in tip being used to feature these different possibilities. Because the Bailov, one, Hemir Doso, he rejected Judaism, he left the fold, or two, Nishtata, or became a fool, he lost his mind. And in a state of being a shoita, the person's korban that he had set aside beforehand becomes unfit. As we continue in the Gemara, we of course notice a slash mark indicating that this piece of Gemara is not directly related to that which preceded it. Amar Ullah, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Ochal chelev, a person who consumed forbidden food matter from a slaughtered animal. Chelev. Chelev is part of an animal that's to be removed, and one who does consume it is chayev, if he did it bemazid, willingly, he's chayev kores, and if he did it unwittingly, did it b'shogeg, he brings a korban chatos. So we have a person that set aside, that ate chaylev, v'hifrish korban, set aside a korban, seeking atonement, v'hemir doso, and after he set aside the korban, it was still alive, he didn't sacrifice it yet, he then decided to abandon Yiddishkeit, abandon Judaism. V'chozar bo. And then he returned. He came back. He repented. Hoyul v'nidche nidche. Since the korban was in a state of being unfit, and that was at the point that he was meimir doso, he became a mumar, and since it's cast away, since it's rejected, it remains yidche, remains rejected. Itmar Nami, and we find similarly Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, Amar Rabbi Avo, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Once again, a comment in Rabbi Yochanan's name. Ochal chelev hifrish korban, same event. V'nishtate, and after he set aside the korban, he became a fool, or he lost his intelligence. V'chozer v'nishtate, and then got better again. Hoyel v'nidche yidche, since when he was a shoita, the korban became unfit. So it remains unfit, even though the owner gets better. Utsricha, and I need both of these examples. De'i ashmina kamaisa, had I told you only the first case where it was Hemir Dosa, where he decided to abandon Yiddishkeit, mishum de'ihu docha nafshe, the reason that in the case of Hemir Dosa, that the korban is unfit, is because he willingly chose this unfortunate path. The ihu docha nafshei biodayim. He willingly cast himself away. Avol ha'ai, the case of nishtate de memela kodochi, where it happened on its own, where the korban became unfit on its own, not because of some kind of conscious decision. Emo ki yoshein dami. I might have thought that he is like someone who is sleeping, and therefore when he gets better, it's like someone who set aside a korban and then went to sleep, and we know that when he gets up, he can still bring the korban. Same thing here. If he lost his marbles and he became a fool, and then became sane again, let the korban be kosher. Therefore, I have to tell you that in that case as well, once it's cast away, once it's unfit, it remains unfit. V'i ashmin and hocha, had I told you only the case of nishtate, that the korban is voided, mishom de'ein biyado lachzor, because it's a type of, it's a state of being where it's not in his control to get better. If he became a shoita, he lost his sanity. It's not in his hands at that point to get better. Aval hasam, in the case of hamer daso, to be yodo lachzor, it's within his capacity to straighten out, to come back into the fold. Aim alo, I might have thought that when the korban becomes unfit, it's not a permanent casting away. Therefore, Tzricha, I have to tell you that in the case of Hamir Dosu as well, even though it's Biyodo Lachzor, at the point that it becomes unfit, it remains that way. Omar Rav Yosef. We now encounter another geometric form. We have a triangle with a colored end tip, and it's mentioned on the side, Rav Yosef, and we have the triangles position in two positions, one point up, another point down. We indicated ma'akav, an attempt to keep track. So with the point facing up, it's Rav Yosef, v'haholchim b'shitaso, those that adopt Rav Yosef's approach, afapi shemisas harosha mechaper, that even though the death of the wicked serves as atonement, korbono, the korban that he set aside, nidche, is considered or remains unfit. Abaye, on the other hand, we have inverted triangles, mefakpek im bechlal hamisa mechaperes. He calls into question whether death serves as atonement whatsoever. Continuing then in the Gemara, Omar Rav Yosef, af ana nami tanina. We have a Tanaic support for that which we mentioned above, that a person who is mafrish korban and then hamir doso, once the korban becomes unfit because the owner became himself unfit, in a manner of speaking, it does not come back. It doesn't become fit again. So the source that bears this out says, Hoyu bo kochim. There were in an ir hanidachas. This is a city that is guilty of public idol worship, and we know that it's the contents of the city is to be destroyed in addition to the execution of the inhabitants. So in the city, though, there were kochim. Those are things that were sanctified for the Beis HaMikdash. Kochei Mizbeach Yomusu, if you're talking about things that were sanctified to be offered as sacrifices on the altar, well, since they're part of an Ir Hanidachas, they are to die. These animals are left to die. Kochei Berek Abayis Yiftu. However, the items that were set aside for the temple repair fund, in other words, non-altar dedications, they are to be redeemed. And once they're redeemed, then the items themselves, the holiness that was on them, is transferred to the money, and they can be destroyed then as being no longer holy, together with the rest of the Irani Dachas. V'havinabo, amai yomusu, we ask concerning the Kochei Mizbeach, why is it that they are to die? Kevon de Iktol, havir lehu kapora. Once the Anshe Irani Dachas, once the citizenry of the Irani Dachas is killed, so that serves as atonement for them. Velisku legavoa, and then since the owners received atonement, let the sacrifices now be brought on the altar. So why is this not the case? Why does the source say that Yomusa, that they're left to die? Lav mishum daminun, is it not because we say hoyil v'nidchu yidchu, that once it's cast away, once it's rendered unfit, it remains unfit, even though in the interim there's a state of being where it would seem that they should become fit again. But once rendered unfit, they remain that way. So at this point, if you have Rav Yosef's comment with this source, we would have proof to the idea of hoyel v'nidche nidche. Amar le Abaye. Abaye rejects using this source as an af anan nami tanina to the idea of hoyel v'nidche yidche. Why does he object to that? He says, Omar le'avai, mi savris, who is to say that meis mitoch rishoy havya le'kapora, that someone who dies while in a state of being a rosha, who says that he gets kapora, meis mitoch rishoy loy havya le'kapora, I will tell you that someone who dies while he is a rosha does not get atonement. In other words, if these anshei ha'nidachas were guilty of idolatry, so the korbonos were nidche, they are rendered unfit because the owner left the fold, and we don't have an example of the owner of these coming back into a state of acceptability in order to use this information to conclude our case. Our case deals with someone who was Hamir Doso V'chozarbo, and he came back, he became proper again. According to Abaye, we don't see someone becoming proper again. Hence, this cannot support the above discussion. Ditoni Rav Shmaya, we have the following source that Abaye is citing to bear his point out. Yochol afilu pirshu afoisa midake tzibor yitma. In dealing with halachas, laws concerning a kohen and his ability or the iser of his defiling to the dead, we know that a kohen is entitled, and some shita say must defile himself, expose himself to the tumah, the ritual impurity of tumas meis when it comes to the deceased, a deceased who is a relative of his. This source raises the question: what happens if his relative, his father, for example, was a person who abandoned the faith? Yochel afilu pirshu avoisov midake tzibor yitmo. Would a kohen be allowed to metame himself, to expose himself to ritual impurity to a father who was evil? Talmud lomar be'amov. The same pasuk uses that expression, be'amov, which means be'oisa ma'isa amov. Someone who practiced the practices of the rest of the Jewish people, not someone who went off the path. So this shows that once, if a person dies in a state of rishus, he remains in that state. Because otherwise, if he's receives kapora through the death, then why should the kohen not be allowed to metame to such a relative? Notice how the triangles are flipping back and forth. We're now going to take a position to defend Rav Yosef. Rava says, how can you bring from this proof to our discussion? How can you compare someone who is killed by because of being found to be evil, as opposed to someone who dies naturally? Meis mitoch rishoy, kevon dechi urche komayes lo havyole kapara. The case that you cited, namely the case of the kohen being metamo, is describing a relative who died through natural causes. Death through natural causes does not create atonement. However, neherag mitoch rishoy, someone who is killed mitoch rishoy, like we saw in the case of the ir hanidachas, kevon delav ki urche mayes, since he died in an unusual fashion, he does achieve atonement. And as such, the question was raised, why are they left to die? So from this, Rav Yosef reached his conclusion, and Rava says a proper conclusion, because proof to this idea that dying through unusual ways does provide kapara, we see in the following dichtiv. We cite a pasuk, two lines, Mizmor l'Osof, Elokim, bo goyim benachlosecho. The Gentiles have come into your inheritance. Timu es heichal kodshecho, nosnu es nivlas avodecho, machol oif hashamayim. They've cast the nivlas avodecho, the corpses of your servants, to be food for the birds of the heaven. Besar chasidecho l'chayso oretz, and the flesh of your pious ones for food for the beasts of the land. In this pasuk, we see a reference to avodecho and chasidecho, two expressions which we've dashed underlined in the pasuk. my avodecho, my chasidecho. What do these two expressions mean, your servants and your pious ones? Lav chasidecho equals chasidecho mamash. Is it not so? The chasidecho means those that are literally your pious ones, that have always been pious to you. And avodecho, those are hanoch de mechayvi dina de meikara. These are a reference to those who were really wicked initially. The kevan to iktol, since they were murdered, as this pasuk indicates that the the goyim plundered us, kori luhu avodecha. Never, and as a result of having been murdered, they are called your servants. A positive expression. Omar le Abaye. Abaye says, you can't bring proof from this that someone who's killed by the goyim in fact achieves tzaddik status, and use this to prove the to prove against me. Omar le Abaye, mi komedamis haruge malchus la haruge beitin. Can you compare those that are killed by the goyim to those that are executed by Beis Din? Haruge malchus, those that are killed by the goyim, kivan d'shaloi bedin komiktikuli, since they were killed not by letter of the law, they didn't deserve to be killed, so to speak, by having violated a specific capital offense, and yet they were killed. Havilu kaporo, that type of death serves as atonement. Haruge Beis Din, people that were killed by the court because of violation of a capital avera, capital sin, came under bedin komiktili, since they were killed by letter of the law, lo havia lahu kapara. That type of death does not serve as a kapara, does not serve as atonement, teda disnan. You can see this from the fact that our Mishnah teaches, lo hoyu kovrin oisoi v'kivros avosov, that the condemned was not to be buried in the cemetery of his family plot. If you were to think like you are suggesting, that once he is killed he does achieve kapara, likbaru, he should be interred in his family plot, because at this point he is a tzaddik, he should be considered righteous having achieved kapara. So the response to that is misa ukvuro ba'inan. I remain of the opinion that the death does serve as atonement, but not on its own. Death plus burial, if the person who's executed is then buried, the death does offer atonement. And the reason that the behemos kochim of the Irani Dachas, the sacrifices of the Irani Dachas, are left to die is because of what I said, would say Rav Yosef and those that support his approach, that once they are cast away, hoyol v'nidchu, nidchu. Moisiv Rav Ado Bar Avo. We have the following source that says, lo hoyu mis'ablin elo oininin, that there was no practice of the mourning period, only aninus, shein aninus el v'lev. Aninus is something that's a state of mind only, but not an external practice. V'yi salka daitoch kevon de'ikbor havilu kaporo. And if, like you were suggesting, that death plus burial provides atonement le'ablu, so there should be avelus. So we see from the fact that there's no avelus that there is no kaporo whatsoever. So the response to that is, notice once again how the triangles are flipping back and forth. The response to that position is, bo'ino nami iko bosor. In order to achieve the atonement, you need decomposition as well. In other words, death does afford atonement, provided there's death, burial, and decomposition. Daiko nami, by careful reading, you can see this. Dikotoni nisakil habosir malakden esat samus v'kovrin osan v'mgomon. That once there's nisakil habosir, there's decomposition, then they malakden, they gather the remains and bury them in the family plot. Shma mino. So from here we see conclusively that death, combined with these additional factors, does provide kapora. And then the only way to explain the issue of the animals not being offered as sacrifices is because they were rendered unfit for a moment, for a time, for the time being. And even though a positive state comes, sets in later, the korbanos, once they're cast away, they remain that way. Before we go further, we have a structural note on the outside margin, because we have here triangles. Though they're part of the general flow, we also have numbers with them, and they represent as follows. The Mivneh Hemshech, notice the triangles with 1 and 2, Shtei Tshuvos, two answers, Lahasbir, to explain, Shafal Pi, Shemiso, Kvura, Mechabrin, even though death and burial do serve as atonement, Ubozeh, Muzbar, Rav Yosef, the Karbonos Ir Hanidachas Nitru, and that with that we understand Rav Yosef's approach that described the sacrifices of the Ir Hanidachas as being cast away, as being rejected, and not, and once it's pushed away, they cannot be reinstated. Nikol Mokom Lo Misablin, but nevertheless there is no Avelus. So that with this in mind, we said that one requires to achieve the required atonement, one needs the burial and the death and the burial and decomposition. And as a result of that, we don't have the avelus. Rav Ashi Omar, Avelus Meimosai Kol Maschilis. Rav Ashi is a second approach. Why there's no Avelus is, when does Avelus officially start? Mistimas Hagolel, from the sealing up of the grave or the covering of the casket. At that point, Avelus starts. Kapora Meimosai Kol Havya. At what point does the atonement set in? Mechi Chozu Tzara de Kavra Purta, when there's the pain of the grave, a little bit of the pain of the grave, which is something that takes place after Stimas HaGolel. In other words, if you explain Stimas HaGolel as being the covering of the casket, the Tzara, the Kavra, takes place a bit later, a moment later, after that. So, but at the point that the Velus would have started, he had not yet achieved Kapara. The Rav Ashi is adding here that you don't need to have necessarily decomposition. However, Hilka Hoyol V'idchu, since the Avelus was not able to start at its designated moment, namely at Stimas HaGolel, because that was still before Tzara de Kavra, Yidchu, there's no longer Avelus. Ihachi Lomali Ikol Basar. Now, a technical question. According to Rav Ashi, if it's so that there is Kapara at Tzara de Kavra, then why does the Mishnah mention that we require decomposition before we can reinter him in the family plot? Let us reinter him sooner. So the Gemara answers, Mishum de lo efshar. Because once the body is put in the ground and the decomposition process starts, he cannot physically be reinterred. That's Mishum de lo efshar. Rashi, he points out Mishum de lo efshar litlo Mishum de nivka kreso umasriach, because before full decomposition takes place, the body splits open and there's a terrible stench, and as a result of that we don't reinter him until later on. Even though, at the point of Tzara de Kavra, according to Rav Ashi, atonement really is achieved. We have a slash mark indicating that the oncoming Gemara is of a totally new nature, even though we're in the general realm of graves, but it's a new discussion. The topic heading, under the heading No Say in the margin, Kever Mutar Behano, a grave is allowed to be benefited from.
the karka olam eino neaseres, because the ground that's the ground that forms the grave, ground itself does not become forbidden. This is, of course, as opposed to other elements associated with the burial, for example, the shrouds and the coffin and other items do become forbidden, but the grave itself, the ground that forms the grave, does not become forbidden. Kavre, the Gemara continues inside, Kavre de Rav havu shakli mine afro v'ishto bas yoma. The kever of Rav, the grave of Rav, there used to be people that would take from their dirt, from the grave of Rav, for the purpose of healing ishto bas yoma, a type of ailment. Asu amru le l'Shmuel. They informed Shmuel that they were taking dirt from Rav's kever for healing ishto bas yoma. Means the bas yoma means the first day of this ailment. If they would take dirt from Rav's grave, it would heal them. After Shmuel heard that, Omar Lehu, Shmuel responded, Yeus Avdin, they are doing well, they're allowed to do that. And the reason is, Karka Olam Hu, the grave is attached to the world, it's part of the earth. The Karka Olam Eino Ne'eseres, ground does not become forbidden. Dichtiv, Vayashlech Es Afaro Al Kever Bnei'om, and its dirt, its remains. This afara is a reference to the Asherah tree, which is an idol, a type of idol, idolatry. This Asherah tree, which was burnt. The Pasuk says, and the ashes from that burnt Asherah were thrown on the graves of the people. The purpose of this Pasuk is to compare Makish, Kever B'nei Om, compare the graves of the people, La'avodes Kechavim, to idolatry. This pasuk having featured the Asherah. Ma avodes kechavim b'mechuber lo mitzar. Just like idolatry, idols, when you're dealing with something worshipped that is attached, that which is part of the ground that's worshipped. If they would worship stones that are part of a mountain and attached to the mountain, the stones would not become forbidden. Skipping the bracket exception for a moment, Hocha nami b'mechuber lo mitzar. So too here, when dealing with a grave, that which is attached would not become forbidden. The note concerning these brackets that we just skipped was as found on the margin. Sograyim l'shem dilug the hokel akriya. The purpose of these bracketed lines is in order to skip them initially to ease the reading, like we just demonstrated. The section in the brackets will give the source for the stated point that attached idols do not become forbidden. Dichtiv. Asher atem yorshim oisam es Elohim al heharim horamim. The posik is a reference to the conquest of the land of Israel, and you will inherit them, and everything that they worshipped, and of course eventually destroy it. The drusha is as follows: al heharim Elohim. Their idols, their Elohim, their idols are that which are found on the mountains. V'lo hehorim Elohim, but the mountains themselves cannot become their idols. And that means that even though someone may bow down to a mountain in worship, and in fact that's quite forbidden, nevertheless the mountain itself does not become forbidden, does not become doesn't take on the din of an idol. Hocha nami b'mechuber. So too over here, just like we described, idols that are attached to the ground, like mountains, do not become forbidden. So too the kever, which is made of, which is defined by the ground that forms the grave, does not become forbidden. Hocha nami b'mechuber lo mitzar. Meisvei, we encounter a new geometric form. This is explained in the outside margin of the Mivneh. Notice the diamond with the colored in tips. Sidra Shel Kushiyos, a series of questions. Makuros, these will be sources, Shemashma Mehem, that it sounds from them, Shekever Oser Bahano, that a grave, in fact, is forbidden to derive pleasure from. I'll call Kushi HaGemara Doicha, Shemaduva Bekever Binyon. As far as each question that's raised in these diamonds, the Gemara will reject them and say that the graves described are graves that have been constructed with bricks and with stones. These are examples of things that were once detached and then subsequently attached. Things like that, as opposed to a mountain, things like that do become forbidden. So at this point, we're of the thought that a kever, which is mechubar, does not become forbidden. Meisve, the Gemara asks, ha-choytsev kever li-oviv, ve-holach ve-kovroi ve-mokoi macher, someone who hewed out a grave for his father, and then decided to bury his father somewhere else, ha-reze lo yukovro boi alonis. You cannot use the original grave that was made for the father ever again. So at this point, it sounds like you're dealing with a simple dug-out grave in the ground, and yet it's also to bury anyone else there, and certainly not to use it for personal gain, for personal benefit. The Gemara rejects this. This is not parallel to the case of the grave we were discussing, because Hocha v'mayaskinon, this is talking about what? The Kever Binyan, a constructed grave made of stones or bricks that were that lined the grave, and those things do become forbidden. The Rashi says here, Bekever Binyan, Shebonoi Lamalam and Akarka, this is a grave built above ground, the Kavoseba Vodazara, and the parallel case when dealing with idolatry, and in fact we were drawing a parallel between these two topics. Bayas Shebonoi Mikhila Vodazara, also a house that was constructed initially to be worshipped, becomes forbidden. The Tolosh Ubisov Chibro, Have Tolosh, that which was once detached, like the bricks and stones made for building a house, and then attached, they were cemented together on the ground. Is nevertheless Havitosh is considered detached, the Indian of Arizora, as far as halachas concerning idolatry, which would mean that they do become forbidden. The Kevernami is Kishlav Arizora, and a grave that's constructed in the same manner, an above ground grave, that too can become forbidden, like the Avodah Zarah. Continuing in the Gemara, Toshma, we cite another source. Kever Chodosh Mutar Bahano. A grave that was prepared, but not with a specific body or deceased in mind, that one is allowed to derive benefit from. However, Hitil Boi Nefel, Osir Bahano. If a miscarriage was put in that grave, it becomes Osir Bahano. So what do we see from here? We see a kever being Osir Bahano. This is against that which we said above. Moshe says, no, Hochanami Bekever Binyan. This too is describing not a simple dug-out grave, but rather an above-ground grave that was constructed. Toshma, we have another source. As we scan ahead in the source, we'll notice our eye is drawn immediately to a dashed, underlined phrase, which says Osir Bahano. The point then becomes very clear that this source is brought in to show that a grave is Osir Bahano. If you skip to the end of the source, you notice the Gemara right afterwards says Hochanami Bekever Binyan, the same type of answer as we've seen till now. So we begin the source, Toshma, Nimtza Ata Oimer, Sholosh Kavoros Hain. There are three separate laws regarding graves. Kever HaNimtza, a found grave. Kever HaYadua, a known grave. Kever HaMazik Esaravim, and a grave that interferes with the public. The Rashi points out across from here, Kever hanimtza kegon shehu chadosh v'yodea baal hasada shalot siva ma'olim lekover sham. Have a newly found grave, and the owner of the field in which it's found knows that he never gave permission, never ordered someone to be buried there. Ubigzeva nigbar sham, and the fact that someone was buried there was buried illegally. The source goes on enumerating the different halachas. Kever hanimtza mutter lefanoso, a found grave with a body in it, it's mutter to reinter him elsewhere. Pineo, once he's cleared out, mekomo tohor, the spot in which the body had been buried at first illegally is considered tohor, is not considered ritually impure. Umuter bahano, no one can benefit from that. Kever hayadua, a grave in which someone was buried with the knowledge, with the approval of the owner of the field. Osir lefano, so it's also to remove the body from there. Pineu, if the body is removed, mekomo tomei, v'osir bahano. This is the main point of the source, in that this grave is osir, is forbidden to benefit from. Kever hamazik esarabim, muter lefanoso, a kever that interferes with the public, which it's located in an area that the public travels over, and it would, the Kohanim would become Tomei Mace if they continue on that road. So Pinehu Mekomotor, if they're allowed to remove the body from there, the spot will be Tohor. The Osir Bahano, that's the end of the source. What do we see from here? We see examples of Kever being Osir Bahano. So the Gemara answers, Hochanami bekever binyan. These examples are also cases of a built grave, as opposed to a grave that's simply dug out and is part of the ground. The Gemara asks, Vekever hanimsa mutter lefanoso. In this source, we mentioned that a found grave is mutter to have the body removed and reinterred elsewhere. So the Gemara is asking on this, is that so, that kever hanimtza mutter lefanos, is mutter to clear it out? Dilma meis mitzvah, so meis mitzvah kona makoma, maybe the body that's in there is a body that's called a meis mitzvah. This is someone that died and had no relatives, no one that was going to take care of the burial, and someone stumbled upon the body and buried it there. And there's a rule that a meis mitzvah, the body acquires the spot in which it's buried, and he cannot be removed. So why does the source say that kever nimtza mutter lefanoso? Maybe it's a meis mitzvah. Someone says, no, I don't have to suspect maybe it's a meis mitzvah, because if it was, we would have known about that. Shiny meis mitzvah, the kola islay. The case of the meis mitzvah produces public awareness. And since, in this case, we're dealing with a grave that there was no awareness of beforehand, it must not have been a meis mitzvah. Notice, once again, we have a slash mark indicating that that which follows is of a totally new idea. We have a no say heading in the margin, and an indication that goes till Mem Ches Amud Beis. So as far as our shiur is concerned, we'll be able to start the topic, but the bulk of it will remain for the next shiur, Yirtz Hashem. So the topic here is a machlokes, Abaye V'Rava, we've noted, I Hazmona Milsehi. Is hazmona, is the reservation or the setting aside of something for a specific purpose, which will be illustrated in the Gemara, is that binding? Does it have, milsi means, is it of significance? Does it have legal implications? Let us see the application of this concept of hazmona milsihi in the following. Itmar, ha'oireg beged lemes. One who weaves a beged for a deceased. And we must emphasize here, the case is for someone who already is deceased. In other words, the actions described in this sugya are designed for a specific individual that has already died. Abaye Omer Osir, the mere weaving of the beged for this deceased makes the article of clothing, the shrouds, if you will, it makes them forbidden from other benefit. V'rov amar mutar, that it's okay. that things, by the fact that they've been designated for the mace, don't make them usr. Abaye omar usr, that the fact that the beged was woven for the deceased individual, it's usr. Why? Hazmona milsahi, the designation of something for a specific dead person is milsa, is of legal consequence. And it's as if we wrapped the body in this beged already. But Rav Amar Mutar, he says it's the beged is not forbidden. Hazmono lav milsi, the fact that I designated it for the deceased is of no significance. In order to follow the opinions, we've used a double underline to emphasize the maitaimo of Abaye, what's the reasoning behind Abaye, and that of Rava a little bit later, and you can see that if you spot the next double underline. Maitaimo da Abaye, how does he know to say that hazmona milsahi? Answer, gomar shom shom me eglo arufa. Through word comparison, on the one hand, the pasuk that says va Thomas shom Miriam va tikover shom, reference to Miriam's death and her being buried there, and a pasuk that deals with eglo arufa, which says vi arfu shom es eglo benachal. This is a calf that's brought on the occasion that a murder victim is found between two cities. The closer city produces this calf, and its neck is broken, is chopped. And we say as follows, Ma eglo arufa bahazmona mitzra, just like the case of the egla, this calf becomes usr while it's alive. It becomes usr even before its neck is broken. It becomes usr b'yiridos l'nachle, as it descends to the area in which the ceremony is to take place. Hai nami, the case of the beged that's ne'erag l'meis, b'hazmona milt mitzra, is also through designation, just like by the egla rufa, its designation asers it, forbids it, so too in the case of the beged ha'ne'erag. V'rova, gomar shom shom me'avodis kechavim. Rava has a gezera shava as well between the case of the kever, or the death topic, and avodas zara, where the pasuk says asher avdu shom hagoyim ma avodas kechavim b'hazmana lo mitzra. Just like in the case of idolatry, something that's designated, simply designated, does not become forbidden for mundane purposes. Af hochanami b'hazmona lo mitzra. So too, in this case as well, by the grave, or by the oreg beged lemes, the preparing of the shrouds for the dead, it does not become usur. V'rova maitaima lo gomar me eglo arufa. Why does Rava not learn from the case of eglo arufa, where we saw something that through designation does become forbidden? Omar loch. So Rava answers, mishamshin mi mishamshin gamrinon lafuke eglo arufa dehi gufa kedosha. Mishamshin from mishamshin. Those are things that are mishamish the mace. For example, the beged which serves the mace. From mishamshin, from those things that are designed to serve in idolatry, we learn similar topics from one another. And just like we saw by the Avodah Zorah, that through mere designation, it does not become forbidden. And Rashi quotes the pasuk that says, "Asher avdu sham," they have to actually worship with it, but mere designation does not forbid it. So too, by the mace, mere designation of the article of clothing does not make it forbidden, to the exclusion of the eglo arufa. The egla rufa, the gufa kedusha, the calf itself has inherent sanctity or inherent significance, as opposed to those things that were simply in service of something else. Abaye, who says that hazmona does create isur, that designation does create prohibition, why does he not learn from idolatry? Things that are done in their proper way are to be compared to one another. Rashi uses the expression Derech HaYehudim La'asos Kein. It is the Jewish way to do thusly. Those kind of things are learned from one another. To the exclusion of idolatry, which is a departure from that which is supposed to be done. In other words, it's a forbidden activity. With that, even though we're in the middle of a discussion, we conclude our shiur for today.